And I'll just share a few of my free associations. When we were sitting quietly tonight, there were a few people who drifted in late, probably about 30 minutes into the sitting. I heard someone open the door and come in. And I remembered someone from our community who passed away about 5 or 6 months ago, who was very much a regular for many years in our group, a fellow named Javier, Mexican immigrant, or someone who moved here from Mexico, and was a true bodhisattva. That quality of being that was looking out for the benefit of other beings, and yet he struggled a lot with his own heart and mind and his own challenges. So he both practiced this kind of external sensitivity and responsiveness to the world, and worked with his own mind. So both worked with suffering and the causes of suffering, the end of suffering, internally and externally. And he was at least in his particular way what I consider a bodhisattva. A bodhisattva is someone who awakens, and they may not do this explicitly, like they're not busy thinking about it, but someone who awakens for the benefit of the awakening or the easing of suffering for all beings or other beings. And the Buddha was also called the Bodhisattva. He was called Bodhisatta, Bodhisattva, among other names. He was also called the Happy One. But more often than not, he was called the three most common were Sukhiya, the Happy One, the Tathagata, the one who knows suchness, the one who knows isness, the one who's plugged into the deep inter-being of life, connected with life, and then all the qualities that flow from that deep sense of sensitivity to the life around us is very plugged into that. And then of course, as the bodhisattva, or the one who knew that sense of suchness, the Tathagata, the Happy One, all those names were expressions or reminders that this person, this human being, had grappled with his own existential issues, his own experience as a human being born into this world of change, of unsatisfactoriness, of frustrated desires, of shaky pride. He was born as all human beings are born into this world, and you have to figure out how to find peace when, as I spoke of earlier, you don't know what's going to happen next. We live in a constant state of uncertainty. We live if our eyes are open, we live in a world where there is just almost unspeakable kinds of suffering, things that are just hard to bear. I made a list today I'm not going to refer to my list, but I was just jotting down a list of all the terrible things that are happening in the world that are so easy to become overwhelmed by and hung up on and reactive to, and you can literally spend your whole day angry about the state of the world, or fearful. That's really the biggest one, is people become terrified. If it's painful now, how's it going to be later? Any of you ever have that feeling? Terror, or fear, or worry? We can literally spend a lot of our life in a state of reactivity. And so the Buddha really was a human being confronting the same issues. There's nothing new under the sun. And he, in the course of his study of himself and the world, he saw sickness, he saw old age, he saw death, he saw that these things were normal. They're not weird, they just come with being born. He saw that people were running, were chasing. He said, there's something crazy going on here. He says, why should I, who's subject to sickness, old age, and dying, keep chasing after all those things that are also subject to unreliability and change? No matter what you gain, how you're praised, you'll eventually, whatever you gain, you'll lose. However you're praised, you'll be blamed. Whatever pleasure you have, it'll give way to pain. And then, of course, pleasure may come back again. But these things, any kind of associating one's security and identity with things that are in a constant state of flux, not such a great idea. But he was left with the question, where am I going to find in this world of insecurity, of unreliability, how there's no way I can even find an identity that is secure in this world. There's no way that I can make the world in my image. And the more he saw, the more he saw that beings are all experiencing, are heirs, are inheritors of the conditions in which they find themselves. No matter how much you want this world to be different, no matter how much you care, no matter how much you try to make the world different, which you can't help but doing if you're open, no matter how much, you may not be able to, the world will unlikely show up in your image. Things will not necessarily turn out the way you want them to. And he realized that, and he said, well, how do you deal with that? They're changing, there's so much pain, there's so much that's out of my control. How do I find relief? And it turned out that over the course of his practice, the way he found relief was by being in harmony with the way things are. Instead of fighting life, instead of being in a constant state of reactivity, what he did was he trained his heart and mind to be able to sit in the middle of it, to be able to have steadiness, to be able to have enough strength of heart, openness of heart, and strength of mind, steadiness, enough concentration, enough ability to stay on point, to stay steady, to be able to meet the joys and the sorrows that inevitably meet every single person's life. To be able to meet those sorrows without being buried by them, without being so reactive that you can't literally enjoy life. And in doing so, in finding that open heart and that steady mind, he experienced right in the middle of the world of pain, his heart released. It stopped fighting with reality, and in coming into harmony with reality, he experienced what the promise and hope of anybody's practice is: the sure heart's relief, the cessation, the ending of the tight fist of reactivity that plagues most of our minds, that has not so much to do with what it is that's happening in our life, has really everything to do with the chronic habit of reacting to things, with aversion and grasping and a sense of delusion that makes it seem like we're the only one who's having the difficulties. And if only everybody else could see it. If only everyone else could conform to my view of reality, what I want to happen, agreed with me, because the biggest attachment is to our views and opinions. The biggest attachment is to what I want to happen, or the second biggest. The third biggest is how everybody should be. rites and rituals. And the last one is the biggest attachment is to the sense of myself, that it's all about me. And that makes our mind really narrow and small. And we lose a sense of feeling the kinship with everybody's in the same boat. So when those attachments release, when we see, when our eyes are open and we see that everybody's got issues, everybody's got to deal with a body that is not always young, that's not always healthy, and won't always be here. Everybody's got to deal with it. And to stop treating it as weird. And just so you know, for those of you who are new to these wisdom traditions, there may be a few people left like that, but even back at the time of the Bhagavad Gita, back in the early Hinduism, there was a conversation in the Bhagavad Gita where one person asked another, what's the most wondrous thing in this world? And the answer to this question, what's the most wondrous thing in this world, is that millions are dying around us every day, but somehow we don't think it'll happen to us. So that, it's the same kind of self-deception, same kind of delusion that happens. So anyway, when I was thinking of Javier when he came in, and the Bodhisattva that came from resolving his own reactivity to such a tremendous extent, had a lot of anxiety and a lot of fear and really blossomed, and his mind opened, and he was able to work with the flow of his mind. He was able to work with the flow of life experience and then be there for himself and be there for other people, open-heartedly. And his ministry was he was a dentist, and a beloved dentist, and always used the best materials, and really cool guy. And gave people a lot of time and energy, and wasn't really all about money. And then I think of the Buddha's ministry was to teach people how to work with their hearts and minds. Because he saw that everybody will have their own ministry. Every single one of us is plopped down in the middle of some little drama, some little world, or some big world. It may be in the middle of your eyes open to the enormity of racism. It could be sexism. It could be sexual orientation issues. It could be corporate greed. It could be any one of these areas that your eyes are open to. Now, not every person's ministry is to deal with all those. Every issue. But we find ourselves, our heart being moved by one thing or another in our life. And the whole point is to keep our eyes open, keep our hearts open. It seems that no one really comes to the end of this grasping unless they open to things that are difficult. The fact that life has within it, not just philosophically things are difficult, but we have to face the difficulties that show up every day in our lives. And we have to know how to be able to sit in the middle of that with our hearts open and our minds clear. Otherwise, how useful can we be? How can we be bodhisattvas in the middle of our own world? How can you be at your place of work? Or are you hiding away in fear and dullness and just thinking about you? Or are you tuned in to the office politics? And are you thinking of a way that you can create that you can be a bodhisattva in your little world? Because it does not seem to work in terms of coming to the end of stress, coming to the end of reactivity, to hide away in smallness and tightness. In ill will and aversion, grasping our own isolation and individuality. it seems that the only way that sure, as the Buddha described, that sure heart's release occurs is if we connect, if we let ourselves connect with what he called dukkha. Dukkha is the word for suffering or unsatisfactoriness, that which is hard to bear. He said that dukkha is the springboard to nirvana. So this is not the message we get in our life. The message in our life, in our advertising, is when the going gets tough, the tough go shopping. Going gets tough, the tough hide away. They eat, they drink, they smoke, they hide in their computers and their whatever the fantasy world. But if you truly want to be free, you want that freedom to feel connected to the life in and around you, we can't just hide away in fear of goals and distraction. As Pesha Joyce Gertler put it, you can think in terms of how you are with the life, the world, or how you are with your own difficulties. We distract ourselves from our own internal difficulties. We also distract ourselves from external difficulties. But she says in her poem called The Healing Time, "Finally, on my way to yes, I bump into all the places where I said no to my life, all the untended wounds, the red and purple scars, those hieroglyphs of pain carved into my skin, my bones, those coded messages that send me down the wrong street again and again where I find them, the old wounds, the old misdirections, and I lift them one by one close to my heart, and I say, holy, holy." So the Buddha's teaching, his ministry, was to get people to see clearly and to open their hearts. And I was thinking, when I was thinking about this during the sitting, I thought of the Hafez poem, which I share a lot on Tuesday night, where he said, how did the rose ever open its heart and give to this world all its beauty? It felt the encouragement of light against its being. Otherwise, we all remain too frightened. So the message to me in this poem, how did the rose ever open its heart and give to this world all its beauty? It felt the encouragement of light against its being. Otherwise, we all remain too frightened. So the teachings, whatever your universe is, asks you to shine the light, to let that light in you shine on this world, on whatever the condition that you find yourself in. Shine on your heart, on your difficulties, on your relationships, on everything. And especially in terms of coming here, we put the light on this body and our hearts that we maybe have been running from. And we come home to ourselves, as Derek Walcott says, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you've ignored for another, who knows you by heart. So we come home to that. We put the light of attention on our minds and bodies. And of course, when you put that light on yourself, when you come here, what do you find first? You maybe have an initial happiness to have finally come back to yourself, come home a little bit. You find your mind for once during the span of a day in the same location as your body. And you may feel just a glimpse of a moment where your mind and body come together and you feel a sense of harmony, a sense of home. Maybe for one moment, it's that moment that you don't want to be somewhere else. And if you stay there a while, that and let that light shine on your experience, you will get a healing. It's essentially like that poem, "On My Way to Yes, I Meet All Those Places That I Have Said No To." And what you will find, though, what you've said no to, is that both a body that has been neglected, we've become so disembodied, so habitually lost in thought, so our body at first may not feel so hot. So we open to the dukkha of our body and we realize, oh, human beings have, it's not just me, but all human beings have achy bodies, have restlessness, have agitation, have tiredness, but also have this capacity for calm and ease, tenderness. And then we see the flow of our mental habits. When that light shines on your mental habits, you see, oh, I'm spending most of this hour wanting something that I don't have, worried about what's next, thinking about what happened before. My mind doesn't stay here for more than a second before it's constructing a world of past and future, and me as the central character in this profound drama of trying to become somebody. And meanwhile, I haven't gone anywhere. Nothing's happened. There have been just six experiences repeating themselves over and over, but I've just constructed this world of drama, this world of lack, this world of hope, this world of expectation, this world of dissatisfaction. It's usually a world that says, I can't be quite happy now. And my mind gets caught in wanting, my mind gets caught in aversion to what's here, my mind gets caught in worry, my mind gets caught in exhaustion, my mind gets caught in doubt. But I keep shining the light anyway, and I use those same mental states, those same habits of mind that can ruin my life when I don't notice them, and those very states of mind become my door to the bodhisattva, the door to wisdom and compassion, because I see, oh, these mental states cause suffering when I don't notice them. They send me down the path that says I can't be happy. That's not true. Because the more I stay here, the more I start to realize the natural happiness of being awake and conscious. And those are just hindrances. Those are just confused ideas. And I see, oh, the whole world around me, everybody's caught up in their desires, in their aversion, in their restlessness, in their torpor, in their doubt. I'm not so different. Nobody can help doing what they're doing. They're just asleep, sleepwalking through these mental states. And the more I pay attention to them, I start to feel the relief and the freedom from not being bound up and wanting things to be different all the time. And then that makes me a little bit easier with myself, and then it actually helps me be a little easier with everybody else that's caught up in the same drama. Then I'm freed up to give to this world more of my beauty. How did the rose ever open its heart and give to this world all its beauty? It just felt the encouragement of light against its beauty. So that's why we practice. We don't practice to stay isolated, to just, even though there is a benefit to periods of seclusion and isolation, so that we can train our hearts and minds. But it's meant to encourage us to give to the world all of beauty in whatever ministry we have. It doesn't mean you have to You have to be a meditation teacher. You don't have to be the most enlightened person in the world. It's not about competition. It's not about satisfying your ego to be special. It's about clearing the dust of memory and habit so that you can, so that your heart and your light can shine. So I was thinking about the people who, the last stray thought I'll share with you. I had Javier, I had the Buddha, the Bodhisattva, I had the Hafez poem, and then last but not least, I had the unsinkable Molly Brown. She floated through my mind. Person who, in the sinking of the Titanic, kept everyone's spirits buoyant, buoyed by her equanimity, by her balance, by her good cheer, in the midst of hell, in the midst of this horrendous situation. And every one of us has that capacity to experience, to know a profound equanimity, a profound unshakable balance of mind that comes through wisdom, comes through that open-heartedness that says, I can sit in the middle of everything. I will keep my heart open in hell, and I will do everything I can to be a benefit to this world, but I also know that conditions, things are as they are. And for those of you who don't know about some of the traditional recitations, reflections that help us remember that we have this capacity within us, the teachings of the what's called the immeasurable quality of the Brahma Vihara of equanimity, which is considered one of the great heart qualities. The first heart quality is loving kindness, the second compassion, the third is altruistic joy, and the fourth is equanimity. And equanimity is the loving kindness that's mixed with wisdom, that understands that with openness to things, with a certain kind of impartiality to conditions in our life, kind of openness to everything, but also the understanding is we may not be able to change what happens. So the traditional recitation is, I care about you, but I can't keep you from suffering. And the more specific traditional phrase is, all beings are the heirs of their karma, their conditions. Their happiness or their unhappiness depends on their actions or their karma, not on my will or my wish. I care about you, but I may not be able to keep you from suffering. And we can, our wisdom, our practice of awakening can help give rise to this equanimity. We'll see for ourselves that we are there, that we are experiencing the effect of the conditions of our life, of both non-personal conditions and our individual choices. And there is a lawfulness to which our life unfolds. It's not an accident. We experience what we do. The collective things that happen, or because of greed and hatred and ignorance, this world that's so blind in so many ways, that's not an accident. Because people are shrouded in confusion and ignorance and privilege. And so when people are shrouded in confusion, there is a sense of separation, there's a sense of othering, and things like that happen. We begin to understand how that functions in our own lives. And then we naturally begin to understand how that functions in other people's lives. And in that process, that connection opens our heart of compassion. But our heart opens, yet we have in the middle of it understanding that allows us to maintain some balance so that we're just not completely overwhelmed by how crazy it is in this world. Anyway, all this came because I've just been struck by by how crazy everything is. Is this just me? Is absolutely mad for such intransigent kinds of suffering. So we have to find a way to sit in the middle of it. We have to find a way to be able to be a benefit at the same time. And that is the promise and hope of every, it's the promise of practice. It's the promise of awakening. And it is the gift of awakening to create the inner conditions to be able to help the outer conditions. And so to me, it's what gets me out of bed every morning. Is I want to shine that light so that I can give to this world whatever beauty there is that can shine in a human being. And I hope you do the same thing in your ministry. You all have one, whether you think so or not. Start with the person who you have to live with every day, or people, or work with, or the clerks in the stores. And open. Anyway, you've heard enough of me. Any comments before we leave? Questions? Well, thanks for listening to tonight's Stray Thoughts. Let's see if we can find a passage to end with the words of the great forest master, Ajahn Chah. His teachings on equanimity and freedom. Just go into the room and put one chair in the center. Take the seat in the center of the room, open the doors and the windows, and see who comes to visit. You will witness all kinds of scenes and actors, all kinds of temptation and stories imaginable. Your only job is to stay in your seat. You will see it all arise and pass, and out of this wisdom and understanding will come. As I see it, your heart and mind is like a single point, the center of the universe. And mental states are like visitors who come to stay at this point for long or short periods of time. Get to know all the visitors well. Become familiar with the vivid pictures they paint, the alluring stories they tell, to entice you to follow them. But do not give up your seat. It is the only chair around. If you continue to occupy it unceasingly, greeting each guest as it comes, firmly establishing yourself in awareness and kindness, transforming your mind into the one who knows and cares, the one who is awake, the visitors will come and go, and perhaps even come back again. If you give them real attention, they will. How many times will these visitors return? Speak with them here, and you will know every one of them well. Then your mind will be at peace. So this is the happiness of the Buddha. Sits in the middle of everything. May all of us, all beings everywhere, become bodhisattvas. Those awakening for the benefit of others. May all beings everywhere have happiness and peace and the causes of happiness and peace. May all beings, without exception, be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings be liberated and know the sure heart's release. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your generosity. Thanks for your presence. As you may be able to sense, it's not just what you receive by coming to sit with other people. It's what you actually offer. It's a great gift to everyone else that you're here. So thank you, and hope to see you next Tuesday.